This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What's up, Clint? How y'all doing, man?
We have a liftoff.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
The Rockets were down big, had a very poor showing in the first half. Ime called upon his bench. Those guys delivered. And the Rockets, again, were within two a couple of times, but that's as close as they will get. 105-88, your final score.
Yeah, the Rockets took one on the chin, man. Two nights in a row, back-to-back right here in Houston. They dug a hole in both games. They were able to dig out against the Suns and get a W. And last night, they were not able to dig out against the Golden State Warriors and get it done. You heard the man. They lose 105-98. They head into the All-Star break here at 34-21. Before we talk about kind of the state of the program, the state of the organization heading into the All-Star break, let's talk a little bit, Luke, about the game last night. Look, the Rockets obviously lost, and that for a lot of teams, I think the Astros, the Texans, like, moral victories don't mean a whole hell of a lot. But I do believe that the Rockets are still in a spot right now where moral victories are still allowed, if you will. Let's put it to you that. At least in my opinion, they're still allowed. And the silver lining here is that, again, they got down not just double digits. This time it was 24 points early in the third quarter. They were down 24 points, and they were able to dig all the way out and make it a two-point game in the fourth quarter. And it was done predominantly by the Rockets bench. Like, literally the Rockets bench. No Jalen Green, very little Amon Thompson. No, during this comeback, I don't remember seeing Alperen Şengün on the floor at all. Tari Eason wasn't playing because he doesn't play back-to-backs. I don't remember seeing Dylan Brooks on the floor at all. They were literally down 24. The bench was able to bring them back and get within two. And it was so impressive that Ime Udoka said, "Fellas, y'all got us here. I'm going to ride with y'all and see if y'all can get it done." Now, the only problem is Steve Kerr turned around and said, "All right, I'm gonna get Curry. I'm gonna get Draymond Green. I'm gonna get Jimmy Butler. We're gonna get them all on the floor at the same time, and we're gonna stop this bleeding, and we're gonna go get us a dub." And that's exactly what happened. But the silver lining is, Luke, for me, that again, they were able to dig themselves out of a bigger hole than the first time. But again, it was the same way they did it two nights ago against Phoenix. It started on the defensive end of the floor. And it's one of those where their identity is grind, be physical, never quit, and get it done when it's not the easiest. And once again, that identity shines through. Although it was the bench this time, the identity shines through. And the way in which they get it back, it started on the defensive end. The momentum carried over on the offensive end, and they were able to get some buckets and get back in this thing. But the depth and the way that they got back in this thing is the silver lining for me with the Rockets.
Yeah, you know, in the micro, they lost last night's game. In the macro, it was you sacrificed last night's game a little bit for the future of this team and the rest of the season, where I know a lot of Rockets fans were calling Ime stubborn. But I thought it was the right move to keep rolling with those bench guys, even through a 2-for-15 drought in that fourth quarter and unable to get over the hump and eventually losing that game by, you know, a few scores. But I don't think he was being stubborn. I think it's sending a message, and sometimes you sacrifice a game. Hey, if you pull out a victory, great. If not, that's okay. And you send a message to your guys with that message to the starting lineup last night of just needing more, needing a better effort. And a college basketball coach used to always say to me, team becomes a lot more coachable after a loss. So this team right now is going through a bit of a slide. You have this break with the All-Star break, and when you regroup next week, you know, hopefully you get a little more motivation. You know, Udoka is going to be lighting into them. But I think last night helps continue that, of especially to those starters. Like, we need a better effort out of you guys. You kind of mailed it in this last game before the All-Star break, and the depth pieces gave you some good minutes last night, which, as you get healthier, that's going to help this roster be even deeper moving forward and help those guys grow even more. But last night's kind of the Rockets in a summary. They play good defense. They play hard. But when it comes to a two-point game with about 4 minutes left, who's that go-to guy? Warriors have a few options.
Yeah.
Rockets don't. That's where the separation increase at that end of the game. And, you know, the Rockets lost a tough one at home.
Yeah, I think that's interesting you say that. I think that game was indicative of the overall Rockets team right now. Is, like, they were able to stay in the game, or get back in the game and make it a game with the hustle and the grind and the grit and all that. But when it came down to it, they had zero chance when Golden State put their studs out there. And so when you look at the Rockets, they're significantly better. They've built a foundation. They've got an identity. But when it boils down to it and it's time, the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, they don't have that guy or the guys that are going to go get buckets for you. Like last night, they did a lot of the damage with Curry on the floor. But once Curry hit that three at the top of the key, he stopped their momentum, and then they got Butler and Draymond Green on the floor, and boom, all of a sudden they took off. And I only say that to say that's what the Rockets don't have right now. Even if they hit that three, they don't have the dudes that are gonna consistently give you the chance to be hard to beat. You know, that's a spot where the Rockets are lacking right now. But boy, I'll be honest with you. You said stubborn in that shooting drought with them backups. I sure enough was hoping he'd go back to his starter.
I think most people were, but I think he was sticking with his guns and sending that message. And last night,
I didn't see the first half, Luke. So to be clear, I missed the first half of that game. So I don't know. I didn't know what happened for them to dig a 25. I knew obviously they didn't play well, but I didn't see it. So I don't know how bad it was when he was sending the message.
Yeah, I mean, Sengun was a minus 19, Dylan Brooks minus 13, Thompson minus 4. I mean, they were, you know, getting run off the floor with those guys. And that was one of those last night that I always call a driveway game, where I'm the youngest of three boys. Maybe I feel good playing against my buddies in the driveway, feeling like hot stuff, and then my older brothers put me in my place. And that was kind of last night, where Aaron Holiday is going for 20 points, playing well, but then, you know, when push came to shove at the end of the game, the Rockets went 2-for-15, and Steph Curry pulled out a win.
Hey, big shout out to Jock Landale. He did have him an evening. Fun to watch him. Nate Williams arrived and had him a big game, but it wasn't enough for the Rockets. They lose 105-98 in game two of a back-to-back here at home. The All-Star break is here, and Luke, they are 34-21 going into this All-Star break, as you've mentioned a couple of times here. Just overall, man, the Rockets and I mean, I would have signed up for 34-21 at the All-Star break.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've won two-thirds of their games at home. They're right in the thick of things in the West. I said it earlier. Dennis Green, the late, great Denny Green, always used to say, how you feel about your record depends on when the wins came and when the losses came. So, yeah, they're 2-7. You might feel down about the Rockets, but if you zoom out, 34-21, they've had a good season. They're banged up right now. They're going to get healthier out of the All-Star break. They're going to have some time off to freshen up and regroup. I know this is a tough stretch, but you should still feel very optimistic about the Rockets. And last thing, a little bit of a PSA. The Rockets are third to last in the league in attendance, which is a shame because this is a good team, fun on most nights to watch, having a good year. Go out there, support this team. They're third from the bottom in attendance despite having one of the best records in the league.
Yeah, hopefully that'll turn. I know, Tyler, we've been talking about it for too damn long. We got to get down there.
Yeah, we got to make that happen. One.
Rockets head into the break 34-21, as Luke said. Need some downtime. Hopefully come out on the flip side of this All-Star break healthier and a little bit more fresh and ready to rock and roll.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
5 o'clock fire.
Tell them, Rudy. Tell them. Hey, the Astros, they are West Palm Beach. Spring training has began. Pitchers, catchers have reported over the last couple of days. A lot of audio coming out. Dana Brown, Joe Espada. In fact, we'll have some really good Joe Espada audio for you in the next segment. But right now, Lance McCullers is obviously in spring training. He's healthy right now. And Lance is back to doing the trainer's job and giving updates on his health. Here's Lance McCullers on how he's feeling.
They're great. Yeah, I'm throwing all my pitches, so I'm not like waiting on anything. The fastball, slider, curveball, changeup, cutter, the whole thing. So I was like up to 90 the other day in the bullpen, which is really good for me. And been happy with the progress and all that stuff. So it's been a good off season. I'm in a really great spot.
Now, Lance also went on, Luke, to talk about how, which I thought this I think helped me from a perspective standpoint of like everything he rattled off of being able to throw all five of his pitches, touching 90 on the gun, like that is the same as back in 2021 when he was healthy and in spring training, and that's where he was at velocity wise, and so I don't know how honest he's being because I don't remember those numbers. But when he just spouts off being able to throw all five and hit 90, I'm like, okay, well, where is that when you're full go, right? We've been hearing you about throwing from flat ground and from a shorter distance and yada yada yada. Like, where is that? To know that he's right now at the beginning of spring training, he's in a good spot and doing the similar things, if not according to him, the same things that he was doing in 2021. In my mind, that seems to be a good spot for Lance McCullers to be in.
For sure. It's promising. It's nice to hear, but I'm sure Astro fans might be like me where it's been kind of 3 years of these progress reports. You just, at a certain point, you just got to see it. You know, it's like that buddy who always says he's going to do something, and you're just waiting for him eventually to get around to do it. Otherwise, you just want to stop hearing about it. And I know the report, I think, from Chandler Rome was that maybe he'll start pitching at the end of spring training, get into some of these spring training games, you know, which would be, what, the end of March, another 6 weeks from now. So I just want to see him actually on a mound, maybe in a game eventually. Until then, like, this sounds great, but, you know, it's been almost 3 years now. I want to see you in a game and actually show that you can pitch in a big league game at some point this year and bring something to the table. So far, so good, but how much does it really mean? I don't know if it means a whole lot right now.
Luke, it's interesting because, I'm fascinated with the Lance McCullers whole story. Like, a comeback here would be unbelievable, but if you look at it, like, I mean, best case scenario, let's say what you just mentioned, all of that goes to plan, everything's healthy, everything's rocking and rolling, this is, Lance feels great and he's ready to go in a big league game. But according to his health, he's ready to go in a big league game. Where does he fit in? I mean, you're 8-9 deep, if not 10 deep, at the starting pitch. Like, how good does he have to be to crack the top 5 or 6 starters with this team?
Yeah, that's why I said earlier, I put him in the bullpen. I think there's more opportunity in the bullpen. You have 4 starting pitchers, and knock on wood, it's not always going to be like this, but you have 4 starting pitchers who made 28 or more starts last year. Not only do you have a lot of options, but you have guys that, again, knock on wood, got you through the season last year. Hopefully that's the case again this year, but you can never have enough pitching, but when you look at this staff right now, I think there's more opportunities, more need in the bullpen, especially over the course of a long year, than in that starting rotation, and I think that's easier to return from an injury as well in the bullpen. So that's where, me personally, I'd like to see him if he makes it back to the big leagues this year.
Well, Luke, it's interesting you say that because McCullers actually spoke to the thought of him potentially being in the bullpen versus being a starter in the rotation. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I don't think that's an easy job. And being a reliever, I think a lot of times, you know, people almost say, "Whoa, just make him a reliever." I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, to be a reliever at the big league level. It's not like a fallback position. I think that it's doing a disservice to the guys who are in that role. It's very specific. It's very hard. And I don't think pitching, you know, back-to-back days or even, you know, 3 out of 4 days, for me, I think it's physically harder. I think the things that the guys in the bullpen have to deal with throughout a long season, the ups and downs of usages, not really knowing when they're going to be called upon sometimes, that's a harder job. It's a harder way to stay healthy. And so, like I said, it's not just something that you can just decide you wake up one day and feel like, you know, being a reliever. It's a very specific job. I think suggesting otherwise is a disservice to the guys in the bullpen that have, you know, in our pen and in every pen around the league. And so, you know, for me, I'm interested in doing what I've always done. It's what I know. It's what I feel like I can give this team, the most success in.
It doesn't sound like Lance McCullers is really interested in being in the bullpen, coming out of the bullpen. It doesn't seem, in fact, it does seem like he's put a lot of thought into that. It seems like he's had a conversation with a coach somewhere along the way, and it seems like he's come to the decision that his ass just ain't going to be coming out of the bullpen. So I'm with you. It just seems like the natural progression and where he could get the opportunities through the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you from a standpoint of all the different pitches, and you think it would play well in the bullpen. Him being able to empty the tank for an inning instead of trying to go six innings or five innings or 80 to 100 pitches, it seems like that would make more sense. But Lance ain't having it.
No, it's just why I feel bad, I guess, not giving him the benefit of the doubt, but I don't really like that response or that answer. I'd be itching to do whatever I had to help out the big league team and get back on that big league roster at this point. And I think right now, health-wise, he just fits better in the bullpen. Give me an inning every once in a while instead of trying to give me 100 pitches every 5 days. And it might be the outlier, but I referenced it earlier. John Smoltz had arm issues, missed a whole season, was a starting pitcher. They moved him to a closer. He was a Hall of Fame closer. So I think it's easier coming off of injury to go into the bullpen than back into the rotation, especially at this point.
Bury me in the H.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, y'all. I was doing a little digging here and looking at the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl parade that's rocking. And this is 5 o'clock fire worthy. Eagles general manager Howie Roseman, boys, his ass got hit square in the head with a beer can.
Oh, full! I'm assuming like it had probably to be, hadn't
it,
been
it,
popped.
It had to be full. Half of the it hit him. It hit him where the lid, like the top part of it, the circle, the big circle at the top that's hard.
Yeah,
hit him right on the forehead, and he's got
a ring.
He's got a half of it.
Oh man!
As he's speaking to people there's close-ups all over social media. Go to my Twitter right now at Clint Sterner, and there's the video of him speaking, but there's also other pictures where they're zoomed in on. Oh, it's beautiful. 44 ounces of Texas Chill. Oh, that's if it was a Coors Light, Howie Roseman. If it was a Coors Light, I love you.
He took a cold mountain to the face.
Oh, I mean, that is absolutely beautiful. The round edge right on the forehead. He's got a cigar in his mouth. He's talking about, I love this city. I mean, that is.
The only thing that would be better is if someone happened to be like, there's maybe someone out there, a fan at the parade, got a video of the actual moment it happened.
Somebody surely caught
you. Oh, we got to find that, because then you can still frame it, like right when the cans make an impact.
There's got to be surveillance. I mean, they're in Philadelphia, man. There's got to be surveillance cameras on the corners, right?
I mean that's meme worthy.
It's got to be, golly. And he's out there talking about, I bleed for this city. Literally with a beer can wound on his forehead.
Via golly. Beer to the face.
Howie Roseman, how do you cap off being clearly... Clearly, I mean, golly, you can't talk about this Super Bowl without talking about the draft picks and the free agents that were added to this team over the last 3 years. The draft picks over the last 4 years and the free agents this year. I mean, you ain't winning a Super Bowl without Howie Roseman. He's been an absolute monster. And now, how do you cap that off? Get hit in the forehead and bleed for the city of Philadelphia.
Hey, same fan base that threw batteries at Santa, whatever else. I mean,
right, no surprise.
Right. And that was the thing about this team. This was like the first Eagles team, the roster, that was actually kind of likable. And I hate saying that, but the fans, I guess they'll never change.
Sorry, man. There ain't nothing about Eagles fans that's likable at all. Now, I'm sure somebody was throwing him a beer to chug and he just missed it. I mean, maybe the one thing he can't do is catch. He can do everything else from a general manager standpoint. That's absolutely beautiful. All right, the Astros manager Joe Espada. We just heard from Lance McCullers. Joe Espada spoke as well from West Palm Beach. He mentioned something that that'll be changing with the Astros bats this season, right? I'm going to let you hear from Joe next, and we're going to try to figure out who the hell he's talking about with the Astros lineup. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, y'all. Ron Hughley is out. That's the show, by the way. And Luke Morrow is in. And we're rocking and rolling on this Freaky Friday. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. It's been a good one. I'm looking forward to getting home to all three of my little Valentines and seeing if I can't, if my little one remembers. She's supposed to ask Daddy to be her Valentine again today. She already did it once this morning. See if she remembers. She's going to do it again this afternoon. And this time, maybe this time I can ask her to be my Valentine and I can bring her a little something.
There you go.
You know what I mean, Luke? I'm excited about it. I can't get home quick enough, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope everybody out there is having a good Valentine's Day. I hope you got a significant other that you can enjoy it with. And you know what? If you don't, ease on down to the local little watering hole, happy hour. If she's out tonight and doesn't have somebody with her, she is there for the taking, my friend. Now, you got to ask permission. You kind of, I don't mean taking as in you can't just go grabbing hands, but she is single and ready to mingle. Because here's the deal. If she's single on Valentine's Day and she's out, she knows exactly what she's doing. She's doing the same damn thing you're doing. She wants everybody to know she's single. She wants to know you're single, and she's letting the world know she's ready to mingle now. If she really didn't want people to know, if she's worried about it, she'd stay her ass at home.
It's true. She wants to commiserate together.
That's it, Luke. Hey, man, she's out in them streets tonight solo. She's single, and she's ready to mingle, fellas. Put on, like I said earlier, you ain't got to put on your expensive gear. Just make sure you look in the mirror before you leave the house. Make sure it looks right. Put on some of that go-getter juice, and your best one. And ease on out tonight, man. It'll be good. It's a Friday night, too. Shoot, Friday, February the 14th. That is absolutely beautiful. Happy Valentine's to everybody out there. The Astros, meanwhile, are the pitchers and catchers have reported. And we heard last segment from Lance McCullers. Luke, I'm glad to know that because you and I are in a similar place. Of last year, like, I just got to a point where I was over the Lance McCullers updates, right? And he's always talking and talking to the, telling the media, giving the media the updates, doing what you would think the manager or the trainer or somebody else would be doing. And it just got old, man, always updating and backsliding. And now he's back on the mound. And now he's the, I promised to our listeners I wasn't going to do that. But it is the first time that we had an update of what the whole offseason looked like for Lance McCullers. So I wanted to bring that to the people. Now, here's the other thing. Joe Espada and Dana Brown are down in West Palm Beach as well, obviously, and they spoke to the media. And Espada had a lot to say, but there was one particular comment that got me to thinking here, Luke. There's one comment that got me to thinking that kind of, I think, probably took most folks by surprise. Maybe not surprise, but just got you to thinking. It was good food for thought. Here's Joe Espada, the manager of the Astros, talking about the offensive approach being different this year for the Astros than it was last year.
It's going to be a more complete in areas that I think last year we kind of got away from our approach. I think we have talked to our players. I think they're aware of that. And we're going to make sure that we emphasize what makes us so elite is when we're able to see a ton of pitches and we can make our opponents work a little bit more.
All right, now Tyler Milner is obviously beside himself with Altuve's base running. That's his pet peeve. I'm in a spot where my pet peeve with Altuve is off-speed, outside pitch. He's coming out of his cleats trying to pull it over into the Crawford box, right? Like there's just it just happens too often. Hard to make that point. He's a Hall of Famer, best Astro of all time, so it's hard to be real disappointed in him. But I cringe when I see it, Luke. I really cringe when I see it. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Joe Espada is not talking about Jose Altuve, because at this point in time, trying to change Jose Altuve would be silly, even coming from a guy that my skin crawls when I see him do exactly what Joe's talking about. There are guys in this lineup that are going to have to be better, significantly better. They were good last year. They're going to have to be significantly better. And I got a good feeling that Joe's speaking directly to those guys.
For sure. I think overall, in general, the whole lineup needs to be better. I think you could speak in general terms and say, hey, we got to change
our
approach.
By the way, I did not know, Luke, I did not know, you mentioned some stats earlier, I did not know that the lineup was that bad in terms of how few of pitches that they were seeing last year.
Yeah, they were last in the league in pitches seen at the plate last year. And by the way, the top three in their lineup last year in terms of drawing walks were Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, Alex Bregman. Well, two of those guys are gone. And the other one, Alvarez, it's probably more of kind of pitching around him more so than even – he does have a good eye, but he's aided by pitchers being fearful at times as well. So not only were they an offense that saw the fewest pitches in the league last year, but now you're losing two of your best hitters when it comes to having that patient approach at the plate. So good luck this year. Now, in regards to Altuve, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think Espada is gearing it more towards the younger guys. You know, Diaz and Peña are at the top of the list. And then if you look down statistically, just who's the worst at working counts and drawing walks, then you get to even Jake Myers and Dubon, all these younger players. It's not going to be Christian Walker. It's not going to be Altuve. They are who they are, but these younger guys need to develop a better approach at the big league level as they get more experience. And I'm of the school of thought that I think you should be a patient hitting team instead of that aggressive team going after the first pitch so often. And I know somebody on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line earlier said, forget that, be aggressive, go after the first pitch, you know, jump all over the pitcher like the Rangers did to us a couple years ago. But I'll also say this, because I am a big stats guy. While the Astros are at the bottom of the league in pitches per plate appearance, the two teams in the World Series last year were top four. So, and if you go back and you look year after year, the teams that have those more patient approaches usually are the ones that have more success. So I think that's important for the Astros this year to be more patient at the plate, work the count, work these starting pitchers, and put together some better and maybe lengthier at-bats for the offense.
You know, when I hear him, Luke, I think about two guys, and you mentioned them in that there, Peña and Diaz. I've said it multiple times with show is I think those two guys right there I say pressure, but what I mean it's not pressure necessarily, but those two guys I think are going to be the two guys that if the Astros are able to overcome losing Bregman and Kyle Tucker and be, I think they can overcome it in multiple ways, right? The pitching staff can be that good. You can overcome it in multiple ways, but I'm talking about if the bats are going to be as lethal as they were with those guys, with Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, it's going to take Christian Walker being really good, but I'm talking about Peña and Diaz are going to have to be special. Like, they're going to have to take the next step. I think both of them, in my opinion, both of them were better last year. Like, you could see it noticeably. They went from being two guys that chase any and everything and are wild as hell at the plate to Peña. Peña seemed to be better, was still a little bit of a chaser, but seemed to be better. And Diaz just, he was willing to sacrifice power and hit the ball where it was pitched. And I think his numbers showed that, right? So they've showed the ability to tweak their game to a level where as fans, we watch it, we can see it. But when the manager's talking about seeing more pitches, being more disciplined at the plate, I think the top two guys he's talking about is Yainer Diaz and Jeremy Peña. We'll see if those two guys, if we as fans can see any level of adjustment out of those two guys. That to me made me sit back and think, damn, Joe's trying to change some things up there.
Yeah, he sure is. And this is the time to do it when you're having some changes in this lineup and some guys taking on even bigger roles. Yeah, exactly, absolutely. With that turnover. So, and by the way, Paredes coming in, he's another guy that he does do a good job drawing walks, working counts. So that will help too with that lineup.
Good. Then it sounds like he'll fit right in on Joe Espada, what Joe Espada wants to see. All right, y'all, we heard from a new offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans yesterday. We heard some good, we heard some bad. Look, I'll be honest with you, it was all right with me. But there is one major issue that after watching and hearing and seeing and letting it rest for the evening, there's one major issue that still looms, and I believe it's on D'Amico Ryans to get it right. We'll tell you what that is and discuss next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Boys, I had a couple of accidents damn near, and I'm not talking about this cord wrapped around my damn leg on my chair here either. I had to run to the restroom, and I was in a little bit of a hurry. I had my belt about halfway undone before I got to the bathroom, and I ran that old corner, and a female janitor standing there looking dead at me right at the men's restroom. I got my belt undone. If I'd have been two more steps into it, boys, I may have been into the zipper and had a problem. We may have had a problem. Then I get in there in the bathroom, and you know there is nothing like breaking wind when you're taking a leak. I mean, it is just so freeing, right? And she's in the closet next to the men's restroom. You know that little closet right there?
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, instead of just relaxing and doing what I need to do, in my mind, I'm thinking, man, I bet old gal can hear everything I'm doing in here. I mean, I was on thin ice there before I went in with my belt, and then when I was in there with Breaking the Wind, it was like, damn, I got to figure this out, man. We got to keep this crew out of here until we get done at six, so I can freely move around the building a little bit here, man.
Apparently,
yeah, Luke, I'm telling you, man, it's rough. Four hours on these airways, man. Oh, yeah. It's rough, man. You ain't been up. I don't know how you hadn't been to the restroom yet. The hell's going on around here?
I don't drink enough water.
You need to drink some water.
Yeah, you're not
drink
not
some water. Eat some greens, man. Them greens will get you moving. Man.
Yeah, so I heard.
Ooh, I tell you. All right, we heard from the Texans' offensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator, and the head coach yesterday. And I think there was yesterday. It was more of a time to react to exactly what you heard from Nick Caley and good, bad, and different. And as I said earlier, look, there were some good. I love the fact that he spent so much time with Dante Scarnecchia. I love the fact that him and Cole Popovich, I believe is his name. Is that right? Him and Cole Popovich had spent so much time together. They're definitely going to be on one accord, definitely going to be speaking the same language. I didn't like the fact that he eventually got pressed on his identity, on who is his scheme, what is his offense. And he eventually landed on his time in New England and the game plan offense, which I'm not a big fan of, and most Texans fans aren't, because we've experienced that with Bill O'Brien. I personally think it's just a crutch. I don't think it means anything. I just hate hearing it, to be honest with you. But I came to a point, guys, where Nick Caley is exactly what or who I thought he was when they hired him a week ago, right? He holds the title of offensive coordinator, but this is a collaborative effort offensively. This was a guy that was hired to be a part of a machine, not to come in and run the offense, so to speak. And afterwards, again, listening to it all again, hearing D'Amico sell the passion, the energy, the vibe, you know, that's what really sold you on Nick Caley. And listening to Nick Caley, I think there's one big picture thing here with the Texans that's going to have to take place. And now I think D'Amico knew this when he hired Nick Caley, but it lays at the feet of D'Amico Ryans. Like, D'Amico Ryans has to have some really tough conversations with a couple of key players on this offense. There's no way in hell, zero chance, that Nick Caley has the ability to go sit down with Laremy Tunsil and move the needle at all in terms of how he handles the offseason, how he handles the mandatory as well as the voluntary, more importantly, the voluntary stuff with this football team, how he handles training camp, and how important it is that he changes his ways and does things a little differently. No way Nick Caley has the ability to go do that. There is no chance that Nick Caley has the ability to sit down with Dalton Schultz and say, hey, man, that crap I watched on film for 17 weeks last year, that ain't going to get it. You can't play in my offense. You can't play for me. Because he does have a background as a tight ends coach, so he should. Like, I don't have any confidence, I should say. I shouldn't say zero chance. I have no confidence that those conversations are going to be had by the offensive coordinator with the Houston Texans. So that leads me to a spot, Luke, where, and I don't know that I prefer it this way. I prefer it this way, to be completely honest with you. D'Amico Ryans has to have those conversations. D'Amico Ryans, I've been critical of D'Amico. I think part of the problem with this offense right now, I think part of the problem with Bobby Slowick, I think there was a lot of chatter in the building on the offensive side of the ball. And I think there was a lot of guys that just did whatever the hell they wanted to do. They continued to start and play and weren't ever held accountable. I think a lot of that falls on D'Amico Ryans. So I think part of the problem offensively is D'Amico. But D'Amico showed the ability in firing his friend Bobby Slowick after 2 years. Clearly, he has the ability to have the difficult conversations. Clearly, he has a sense of urgency to get this thing right and build, get better than the second round of the playoffs and winning 10 games, right? He's got to be the one, Luke, that has the conversations with the two that I can pinpoint is Dalton Schultz and Laremy Tunsil. Probably more. Maybe there's more out there. I don't know. But the quickest way for this offense to get better is for those two guys, for two different reasons, for those two guys to change their ways. And I believe that D'Amico Ryan's got to be the guy to do it.
I think it makes sense. Yeah, I think for a variety of reasons, really. But at the end of the day, he is the head coach, and it all falls on him at some point. And I think in order to be a head coach, you have to be able, a successful head coach, that is, you have to be able to have those types of conversations. I think back to Leslie Frazier, who got an opportunity to be a head coach in Minnesota, and it didn't really work out. And people said, like, yeah, he was just kind of too nice. And he was too good of a guy, which is not what you want out of your head football coach. But to your point, I think we got a glimpse of it for D'Amico by being able and willing, we assume, to fire Bobby Slowick, assuming, you know, that was his call. And so that's not an easy conversation to have. And so I imagine he could have it with the players, especially as maybe pressure starts to mount a little bit more. But, you know, this was one of my concerns, I guess, with this hire for offensive coordinator, was that if he's not going to come in like maybe a Dan Campbell where he just commands the room, at least you have a track record to point to. And you might be able, you might be one of those coaches that puts your arm around a guy instead of really lighting, you know, lighting into them. But you can point to your success and you could say, like, hey, if you do it my way, look what I did with so-and-so. But the problem is, if you look back at the Patriots, what tight ends did they develop post-Rob Gronkowski? If you look at the Rams, what tight ends have they developed? And they had an opportunity this past year with Higbee getting injured and Colby Parkinson didn't really do much. In fact, his numbers got worse as the year went on. His numbers weren't as good as they were in Seattle. So that's my concern with that lack of a track record. Yes, first-time play caller. But if you could say, like, hey, if you do it my way, I turn so-and-so into a Pro Bowler. Yeah, for example, yeah. Dalton Schultz specifically. Like, hey, if you listen to me, instead of coming in there yelling at him, whatever, put your arm around him and say, if you listen to my way, I'll turn you into so-and-so like I did with the Rams or the Patriots. But there's not really that track record to point to either, which is another concern for me. So I'm with you in the idea of, at the end of the day, it's probably going to have to come down more so from D'Amico Ryans. But, you know, he's the head coach. He has the experience. And these are things he should be able to do. And now I guess he's going to have to make sure to do it.
Yeah, look, I don't doubt the ability to do it. I think D'Amico, if you put some, you gave D'Amico some truth serum, I think D'Amico would tell you that he probably offensively, he cuddled up on C.J. Stroud and told Bobby Slowick, hey, man, you know what I mean? Do your thing. My hands are off. You got the offense. Go do your thing. And that backfired on him, right? I mean, for whatever reason, Bobby Slowick is the fall guy, and rightfully so. I said, I understand where you can justify firing Bobby Slowick. But the reality of it is the dynamic that he built on the offensive side of the football created one where guys weren't held accountable, right? Guys weren't held accountable for their lack of physicality and lack of interest in playing hard and doing those things with Dalton Schultz. Guys weren't held accountable for just showing up and being part of the mandatory stuff and being part of training camp, and guys weren't made uncomfortable at all. And again, Bobby Slowick took the fall there. You know, you look around offensively and it seems like there was a lot of voices in the room. When I hear there's a lot of voices in the room, that means they don't respect the guy that should have the voice in the room, right? They're going around his back and talking about this and talking that and saying this and saying that. And now that may be because Bobby Slowick didn't have the ability to command. He wasn't a leader. Or it may have, you got a bunch of guys that are going around and chirping instead of handling it like a champ and handling it like a coach should handle it. So I don't know what the issue is, but at the end of the day, it's to me, D'Amico Ryans has to get that right. And I don't think Nick Caley, and this isn't as much a slight on Nick Caley, by the way. I know it sounds like I'm saying Nick ain't got no background. I'm not talking about like that. I'm just like, it would take a guy, to your point, with pelts on the wall, with some level of Super Bowl history or national championship history or some kind of like uber successful offensive mind to be like, nah, that ain't it, man. That's not going to work, Laramie. That's not going to work, Dalton. Get your stuff together. Let's ride. Like, Nick's just not that guy. And it's just as important as finding your new offensive coordinator is. I think this is equal to, in terms of getting those guys to shift gears and getting them to understand that it's going to take more than that to move the needle as it pertains to getting to an AFC championship or a Super Bowl at some point in time sooner rather than later.
And I've always said about D'Amico Ryans that I think his message should carry weight in the locker room because he's gone through it as a player, obviously had a great career, and now as a head coach already, he's been successful. But the one knock, the one concern or complaint I've had about the D'Amico Ryans head coaching tenure is just at times I think there has been that lack of discipline where I think you need to put your foot down. And they've been top three in penalties his 2 years, which is, I think that falls back on the head coach. So that's really my only concern with him is those times where you need to put the foot down and be that dictator of sorts. But Luke, I got
to
see it.
No, to me, your point, I can get down with this conversation because right now there's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, man, y'all chill out, man. It's just a long season. No, here's the deal. The Texans' ability to make a run to an AFC championship or a Super Bowl potentially, that ability is going to – that means they're going to have to win 13, 14 games in a season to do it,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, when you've got to go through Baltimore, through Buffalo, through Kansas City, you know, in those outdoor stadiums, in the elements, you're not it's like that's. You've got to focus in on whatever's going to allow you to win 12 to 14 games and be a one, at least get home field advantage for one round of the playoffs, if not all of. Like you got to figure that's uber important to the Houston Texans right now. So don't I don't want to hear no crap about the penalties don't matter. It's regular season. It's a long season. It's just no. You got to go to training camp. You got to get your body right. You got to start fast, right? And you can't lose games by having penalties in critical moments or having so many penalties that it's all the head coach is fielding in his post game press conference. So it is important. These things are important. These conversations do have to be had. And I wholeheartedly believe that D'Amico Ryans can get it done. That's the end game there. Nick Cayley, not so much. D'Amico Ryans, absolutely. All right, y'all. Texans All Access, Vandy and John Harris is up next, 6 to 7 p.m. What Texans offense will look like in 2025 and recent NFL trade rumors are popping. And then, of course, as always, tune in to Area 45, Bijani, Creighton, and Osantiago, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Until Monday, Houston, we love you, baby.
I hated that Steve Kerr was complaining about having to play a back-to-back in Dallas and then Houston.
What a whiny bitch.
It is a Freaky Friday, Valentine's Friday. By the way, I do want to announce it looks like Doge. It looks like Doge just looks like they just found another $1.9 billion. So those out there counting, they found some more of our tax money laying around out there. If anybody is interested in those kind of updates.
That's a lot of money, man.
I mean, $1.9 billion, man. I good gosh. It is wild, man.
Have a good weekend, good golf, good tennis, or whatever makes you happy.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.